Les colloques du Collège de France.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this very lovely colloque, and I'm actually very humbled to speak in such a lineup of fantastic speakers. So today I'm going to talk to you about enhancers in development. And in my lab, what we are interested into is how organs and structure are developed. And we use the LIMP as a model system to do so. The LIMP, as for all other organs, needs many different information in order to be correctly built up. And I'm just mentioned here three of them. First, you need to have specific cell types that populate the LIMP: bone, tendon, muscle tissue, connective tissues. We also have a lot of very transient cell types that exist only for some time in development. Of course, these cell types have to be organized, so of course there is also a spatial notion to, a spatial information to put all of the cell type in the good place. And finally, the LIMP, as all other organ, is a growing organ, so there is a temporal aspect to how to set up all of this information progressively in development. And it's known since a long time that this is actually controlled by so-called gene expression patterns. We have hundreds of genes during the LIMP development that each one play a role in setting up particular structure, interplaying with other genes. And I give you an example here with one gene, BMP2. So I don't think it works, so go like that. Here, BMP2 is this gene, and you see here reproduction of its expression pattern dynamic over time during the LIMP bud growing. You can see that the expression domain of BMP2 is changing over time. It's very dynamic. And this is just 2 days of development here. SOX9 is another type of gene that is important for the formation of cartilage and bone. And same, you have an expression pattern. You can see that it differs quite a bit from the one of BMP2 and change over time. And like that, you have hundreds of genes that all of them have very specific expression pattern dynamic over time. So the questions that I like to understand is, how is this regulated? What are the regulatory mechanisms that enable this dynamic of expression over time? So a little reintroduction about enhancers. Every single gene, basically, especially developmental gene, is controlled by enhancers, in some of them by multiple enhancers. You have this gene here in purple that is controlled by three enhancers that are these little pieces, this little ball that I described here. They can be quite far away on the linear genome, and they control probably via a certain folding of the chromatin that they enable transient or more stable contact with the promoter of the gene they regulate. Every one of these enhancers is a little stretch of DNA that is packed with nucleosome, and it is able to bind transcription factors. And this is a key event because these transcription factors, they reflect either a specific cellular state, a cellular identity, or, for example, an ongoing signaling that is going in the region. And when they bind, they actually bind on this as a platform that will then transmit this information to the promoter they regulate. Because they bind to the enhancer, they induce generally a little opening of the chromatin, which enables us to identify enhancer. And on top of that, you can see also histone modification on the nucleosome next to this binding that are marked by, you know, this histone modification that are very useful to actually identify region that are putative enhancers. So to understand really the dynamic of expression of genes, the developmental gene over time, we developed this very simplistic approach, which takes into account that in development, in a cellular trajectory, every gene has to take different decisions that will enable it to be expressed at the proper time and over the specific time it is required. So gene generally in development start by a poised state. I will not enter into detail what does that exactly mean, but it means basically that a gene can be either activated or repressed from that state. In some cell at a given time point or in a specific space, there is an initiation event where the transcription of the gene will go on, and then it will be maintained for a period of time in order for the gene to, you know, achieve its function. Finally, the gene will stop expression by process that I call here decommissioning, and then there will be final repression of the gene. And you can see that during a cellular trajectory, this event, like the stopping of the expression of a gene, can occur in one lineage, but in the other lineage, we keep the expression of the gene. And in other cells, you will go from poised to repressed without ever having activation of the gene. And that's by combining this decision that you shape this expression pattern that I showed you before. So in the limb, our favorite model system, this works like that. You have the limb arise from a structure in the trunk that is called the lateral plate mesoderm, where most gene locus are transcriptionally inactive, or the limb gene locus are transcriptionally inactive, but are ready for activation. When the limb starts, some of this expression is initiated in specific cell types, and then over time, it will be maintained in specific substructure, descendant lineage, either cell types, or mostly in specific cell types. And in other cells, the early expression will be rapidly decommissioned or stopped in specific cell types again, or in new domain, a new specially defined domain that arises during the limb bud patterning. And then there will be repression in these cells at some point. So just to start with, I mean, many work has already been done in this perspective. And I just want to show you one piece of work that I really liked in Drosophila, actually, in the Betarax complex, where they've shown that the initiation phase that you see here is controlled by a different element than the maintenance phase. The initiation gives positional identity. Where do I activate my gene in development? And the maintenance phase is a more of a cell type specific enhancers that will maintain the expression within these cell types into specific, within this special position of the embryo within specific cell types. So you can see here the different activity of either the initiator element that is specially located or the maintenance element that is in fact controlling the expression in a cell type. Right, so in the limb, you can find similar elements. So if you take 90 limb loci that are active at early development stage E10.5, but also active at late stage, and you look within their regulatory landscape, if you find enhancers that have early activity only or late activity only, you will find a lot of them. You can see here a couple of enhancers where you see the enrichment of K27 acetylation, specifically at the early stage, but at late stage, you see that they are much less active. In contrast, you have late enhancers that are inactive at early stage and quite active at late stage. And then you have this bunch of elements here in between that seems to be active at all of the stages we look at. But you can see that it's a quite important proportion of enhancers that are stage specific here. Give you an example, a SOX11 gene. You can see the promoter of the gene active at 10.5 as well as it at 13.5, so 3 days later. And you can see that within the regulatory landscape of SOX11, the enhancers are changing quite a bit. This guy, for example, is very active at early stage, but it's not active at late stage. This is a so-called early enhancer. You have then this one here that is active at both stage, right? That's a common enhancer. And then, for example, you have this one here that is active more specifically at late stage, that's a late enhancer. And actually, most of the loci we are looking at, they have the three class of enhancer embedded within their regulatory landscape. So this is a very broad description, but of course, if you want to test if these enhancers really truly act independently, and what is, in fact, the link, how do their activity is integrated at the level of the promoter to enable the formation of an expression pattern, you need to go at a specific locus and start to try to test the hypothesis. And for that, we picked up the SHOX2 model locus. SHOX2 is a very important limb gene, so you can see its expression here in the proximal part of the limb. You will see that it's very important to form this structure, which is the humerus or the femur, so it's a specific bone in the limbs. And if you remove the gene, what is quite interesting, if you remove it across the entire developmental time of the limb, you will see a very strong and specific reduction in the size of the humerus, right? So this bone here. And if you remove it in a very short, for the most late phase of activity, you still get a specific reduction of the bone, but it's much less. So you really need a very long maintenance phase in order to achieve the normal growth of the limb. So you need to sustain the expression of this gene quite a bit in order to achieve its function. We also know a lot about SHOX2. That's another reason why we picked the gene. It has already a lot of characterized enhancer within its landscape. So what Raquel Rucco, a postdoc in the lab, did to to understand the regulation of shocks to over time is she devised a transgenic recorder approach where the gene shocks to is tagged directly upstream with what we call a regulatory sensor. You have a minimal promoter, a M-cherry, fluorescent red fluorescent protein, and a Cre. When shocks 2 is active, then the cells become red and it expresses Cre. Cre goes to a second locus. It excites a stop cassette, which drives permanent expression of UYFP, irreversible and permanent. And so the trajectory we have like that can be visible by just looking at the color. Early on, you just have a little bit of red. With time passing, you start to accumulate yellow, so active cell will be yellow and red. And when the gene is shut down, you will have only yellow, right? And in cells that never express SHOX2, they will have no color. And this works quite well. You can see here the activity of the gene locus in red. So you can see in the limb, you can see other fascial and heart tissue that also express SHOX2. You can see expression in all of these. You can see the recorder, EYFP allele, which actually identifies the descendant of all cells that have expressed SHOX2 at a given point. And you can already see something that is quite interesting if you look in the limb. In the limb, SHOX2, which as I said before is a proximal gene, stays expressed always in the proximal. You can see it never goes into the distal part of the limb. But EYFP in reverse expand in the distal part, and you see it here, which means that these cells expressed SHOX2 in the past, but repressed it. And we already see here an important effect of repressing a gene during development because it enables the final expression domain as we know it and the formation of the proximal part of the limb. So we just went on and looked a bit more in detail. Where are the initiating cells? Where are the maintaining cells? Where are the decommissioned cells? Using single cell approach at different stage. So in a nutshell, you can see here are the cells that are the progenitor cells of the limb. We find them mostly at 10.5. They can give rise to both the distal part of the limb and the proximal part of the limb. The maintaining cells, right, that we see here, they are, and so all the proximal part of the limb is here down, and all the distal part of the limb is basically here. So where do this regulatory trajectory start? It starts with the initiating cells. The initiating cells, you can see, they are in the progenitors mostly. Very early on, you can start these initiating cells. Then we have cells that maintain expression. So these are mostly in the proximal part of the limb, which makes sense. We saw it with the expression pattern before. And the decommissioned cells, in contrast, you will find them mostly in the distal part of the limb. And the one that are just repressed, they're also mostly in the distal part. We have some cells that are also here in the proximal one. So this is a little bit the trajectory. We initiate in mesenchymal progenitor cells, then we repress it in the distal, we keep it in the proximal, and some of the distal cells also never expressed SHOX2. And so now we can go on, and with this system, we can sort and quantify all of these cells just using a cell cytometer. A flow cytometer, and you can see here how does that look if you have the EYFP fluorescent here on the x-axis and the DM cherry red fluorescence on the y-axis. You will see a big bulk of inactive cells, cells do not express any of the fluorophore. You have maintaining cells, cells that express, that are currently expressing SHOX2 in the locus, and then you have these decommissioned cells, cells that have repressed the gene over time. And you can see that this the proportion of each of these cell types actually change over time with at 10.5 mostly inactive cells, and this changed very rapidly at 11.5 with an increase in the maintaining cells but also in the decommissioned cells, and then this stays quite stable over time. But you can see that now we can with that quantify the dynamic, but we can also sort these cells and look how the chromatin and how the regulatory landscape of SHOX2 is looking like. So with that, I'd like to answer two questions, or start answering two questions. So how enhancer initiate and maintain SHOX2 expression, and how is SHOX2 regulation decommissioned? So how is it stopped? So to look at how regulation is going, is kept or is activated and kept, we looked, of course, in the active trajectory that starts, as I said before, in mesenchymal progenitor and end up rather in proximal connective tissues. And to find where to look the enhancer, we first just produce a HiSeq of embryonic stem cell to just look where should we look for the enhancer of SHOX2. So SHOX2 is here, you can see in blue, and you have this big domain of interaction that supposedly should contain all of the enhancer of SHOX2. But in embryonic stem cell, the structure is quite loose and relaxed. We see the domain, but we don't see anything more particular than that. If you sort active cells, you see something quite different because you see that SHOX2 is now forming a lot of contact along its both centromeric and telomeric side, that is here, and all of these contacts are probably enhancer region or could be enhancer region. So we thought, okay, this is probably the region where the enhancer are. We sort cells, and now we look at K27 acetylation to find all of the enhancers. This is active, early active cells at 10.5. You will see a lot of peaks along within this domain. And if you look over time, you can see that it changed slightly, right? Some of the region like this one become progressively less active, while a region that is next to it becomes progressively more active, right? So we see that there is a shift between enhancer. We quantify all of that by early enhancer. We have a lot of them. Late enhancer, we have a few of them and a couple of common enhancers that are active across all stages. So we are also quite sure that we identify all of the enhancers of SHOX2 because Fabrice Darbele, postdoc in the lab, produced this very large deletion where we remove both sides, so basically the entire domain, just leaving the little SHOX2 gene in the middle. And if you do that, you can see that both the fluorescent is completely gone in these embryos, so there is no activity of the sensor anymore. Both type of fluorescent mCherry and YFP, and you can see that SHOX2 expression here, control here measured with RNA-seq, is completely down. Right, so we know that the enhancer are here. So how can we test this hypothesis that early enhancer act early on and late enhancer act later on, and maybe they bear different function in the control of gene expression? So we perform first the early enhancer deletion, so two deletion here that remove 7 out of 26 early acting enhancers, and then we produced a late enhancer deletion that removes a little piece here, mostly affecting enhancers that are acting at late stage, among which two of the four late enhancer. So let's start with the first deletion. If you remove early enhancer at 11.5, which is here still early stage, you see a massive drop in mCherry and EYFP. At late stage, you can see that the mCherry is almost identical between control and mutant. The EYFP is also identical on the proximal side, but you can see that you completely lost this domain here, that is the decommission cells, probably meaning that the delay in activation that you see here made these cells not expressing SHOX2 and then, of course, not needed to repress it. So we can quantify that, and so here we can quantify the maintaining cells, so the cells that have the mCherry and the YFP, and we can see that at early stage these cells, they are completely down, almost none of them, and then the system progressively comes back to normal. And this comes, of course, by increasing the proportion of inactive cells. So it means basically cells that are inactive never transited to an active state. And of course, it also influences the proportion of decommissioned cells, because if you don't have active cells, you will not repress them, and so you will not accumulate the pool of decommissioned cells. You can see that if you look at the transcription of SHOX2, it's indeed completely lost at early stage and then comes back to normal, although a milder expression level, but still quite back to normal. So here, the conclusion for this deletion is that early enhancer act transiently, and here they act to induce transcription from inactive cells. Then, in the late enhancer deletion, we saw no effect at 11.5, and we saw a very specific effect at 14.5 in the center of the limb. You will see it better if we quantify it. We see the reverse image here, no effect at the early stage, and a decrease in the proportion of maintaining cells at 14.5, so at quite late stage, in fact. And with the big difference that here we decrease the maintaining cells, but we don't change the proportion of inactive cells. This means that the cells that are lost here were cells that had the gene active and just didn't maintain it. And therefore, we increase the proportion of decommissioned cells. So Here, the enhancer act quite differently because they are here to maintain the expression rather than to activate it. Here is the effect. If we look at SHOX2, we see a decrease at late stage. We see a non-significant increase at early stage, which we didn't fully understand for now. And the late enhancer then act also transiently here to maintain transcription in pre-activated cells. So we see that the SHOX2 expression is controlled here by the transient activity of temporally restricted enhancers. Right. One of the things that's interesting if you look at these late-acting enhancers in contrast to early one is that if you test the enhancer in isolation by just bringing them in front of a reporter gene and you put them in a safe harbor locus where you are sure you don't have position effect, you will see an expression like this, which is in the entire limb. You see it here in the distal part of the limb as well as in the proximal one. And this differs extensively, in fact, from the gene they are supposed to regulate. How come that these enhancers are active in the distal part, but in SHOX2, which is their target gene, is not? And this gives me a transition to the second part, which is a mechanism must prevent this enhancer to activate SHOX2 in digits. And this is where I want to bring you now with, I would say, preliminary, not so preliminary, SHOX2 regulatory decommissioning result. So how do we stop the expression of SHOX2 in this branch here of the trajectory? So first, what we looked is just RNA chromatin modification and topology in these cells, seeing what is happening when you repress a developmental gene. So, of course, this is inactive cells. Active cells, you see the transcription. And in the decommissioned cells, of course, transcription is reduced. This is expected. Active chromatin modification at the promoter of the gene is also decreased quite rapidly. If we look at enhancers, you see the active landscape here full of enhancer, and in decommissioned cells, this reduces quite a bit. Yet, we still see activity of our three enhancers that I just showed you before. We see it even in these decommissioned cells. So how come that these enhancers are active in a locus that is inactive? And one of the possible reasons could be that if we look at the 3D genome organization, there is a quite intensive change. In active cells, as I showed you before, you have this very nice stripe of interaction from SHOX2 to its landscape. And in cells that are decommissioned, this interaction is much weaker. In fact, it looks almost identical to inactive cells, not to ES cells, but to inactive cells. And we do the subtraction, you can see here along the line, the loss of contact. So one of the things could be that something happens at the level of the entire domain to inhibit and preclude this enhancer to activate SHOX2. So SHOX2 decommissioning is here associated with enhancer promoter disconnection. The final few slides will just be on trying to understand and have a tractable approach to try to understand how is this decommission occurring, and to understand it better, we really need to know how to ectopically decommission, how to block this decommissioning in a certain way. So we wanted to identify here transcription factor that can stop the decommissioning of the SHOX2 landscape. An obvious candidate are HOX13 group gene. SHOX2, you can see, is expressed here in the proximal part, and HOX13 has a purely antagonistic expression domain. If you merge, we will see really the border between the two domains, so it's very likely that HOX13 is actually repressing SHOX2, and in fact, there are several reports that show that it is indeed the fact. If you take a limb and you remove all HOX13 group protein, you will see an increase. You can see SHOX2 here being increased quite dramatically in the distal limb. And so our hypothesis is that what drives this decommissioning might be the HOX13, right? So because we like complicated genetics, we decided not to go for a loss of function, but for a gain of function. We wanted to overexpress HOX13, where SHOX2 is normally expressed, and to see if we can ectopically decommission the locus and see what's going on. And for that, what we did we recreated, in fact, an old inversion that was a spontaneous mutation in the mouse. It's called ulnales, and basically it brings HOXD13 here, very close from a bunch of limb proximal enhancers. And as such, it expands the HOXD13 expression domain much more proximally in the limb. And now this domain partially overlaps the one of SHOX2, and this is where we think there will be a functional interaction with the two. If you dissect this part of the limb in a normal wild-type animal and you do a HOXD13 cut and run, you will of course see no binding across the SHOX2 locus. All right. If you do it in the mutant, you can see that the protein is there and it's binding a lot of our enhancers. So that's a good link between the presence of this protein and the enhancer. And actually, if you look at it, it binds in the exact same way that it used to do, not in the normal context, in the distal part. So really, HOXD13 is just able, wherever you express it, at least in the limb, to go and bind to its target place. And it binds specifically this enhancer. It doesn't bind, you know, one category rather than the other. It all binds a bit all of the enhancer and actually a substantial fraction of these enhancers. And if we look at the effect on it, we see an effect that is occurring only at late stage. So we have no effect at early stage. We can just show you here the quantification. We see a loss of these maintaining cells at late stage with an increase of the commissioned cells. So it looks a bit like what I showed you before in the late enhancer deletion, that by overexpressing this D13, we start to have cells that are ectopically decommissioned. They have actually normally engaged the transcriptional process, but they were forced to stop expression a bit earlier. So I'd like to wrap up now just remind you of what I said. So basically, we start here for the SHOX2 locus in a poised state where the chromatin structure is quite relaxed. We have a lot of enhancers, but they are not active at that point. During the initiation process, we use a specific set of enhancers, which would say here early and common acting enhancers. And then we shift to the late and common enhancer at later stages until eventually we arrive to the decommissioning process where the structure becomes again more relaxed, but some of the enhancers that are here are in fact still active. So, and with that, there will be also a repression, right? So, this is it. I would like to finish here by thanking my lab, and especially Raquel and Fabrice, who presented the data today, and you for your attention.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.